For the amateur gambler, games of chance are just that. Chance. You draw a card off the deck, hope that the ace needed for 21 is right there. But what are the odds that it is? That sounds like a math question. Joining us is Weekend Edition's math guy, Keith Devlin, who's at the studios of Oregon Public Broadcasting in Portland. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Scott. Nice to be here.
Let me get something checked with you that Amarillo Slim asserts in his book. He says you take a random group, any group of 30 people, you can find at least two people who share a birthday.
That's right. In fact, you only need 23 people in order for the odds to be in favor of two people sharing a birthday to be just greater than 50%. Mm-hmm. And if you've got 30 people, it's an odds-on certainty you're going to have two people with the same birthday. But the point is, why are we surprised by this? And the fact is, evolution did not equip us to deal with probabilities. We absolutely suck when it comes to estimating probabilities. We really do, Scott. There's nothing we can do about it. Even a mathematician like myself, or better mathematicians than me, and believe me, there are some better mathematicians than me, we all have a terrible job judging probabilities in the real world.
What kind of math is probability math? Is it algebraic? Is it geometric? Is it calculus? What is it?
In most people's terms, it sort of looks like algebra and maybe a little bit like arithmetic. It is computing with numbers, but it's very different from the kind of probability arguments that we carry out intuitively in our everyday life. We'll sort of say, well, there's a 50% chance of rain, and we sort of know what that means. But when you start to make this precise mathematically, I mean, either it's going to rain or it's not. It's not going to half rain and half not rain. Mm-hmm. So that the events take over and the probability disappears.
Let's take advantage of your proximity to the interview with Amarillo Slim to ask you about some of these games of chance, if we could. Because, there are a lot of people who will use something like a slot machine, who will lose pull after pull, or whatever you call it, turn after turn after turn, and they will keep doing it because they tell themselves that because they lose so many times in a row, they've got to have a winning number come up, or a winning combination
right.
come up.
Right. That's technically known as the gambler's fallacy. I would call it the fool's fallacy, because the way these things work, assuming that they're honest and well-designed, they don't have a memory, and the fact that it may have lost 100 times in a row has no influence whatever on what happens next. Each new pull of the arm or each new turn is brand new. Everything starts afresh. The odds are exactly the same.
How do you explain things like streaks of luck in roulette?
In fact, if something is genuinely random, if the wheel in roulette is genuinely random, you will get lots of streaks. In fact, if there aren't streaks, then you would begin to suspect that there's something fishy going on. The same is true in various other sports. You know, I mean, the legendary Pete Rose run was probably as much a phenomenon of randomness as it was Pete Rose's skill as a baseball player.
You mean his consecutive hits?
His consecutive hits,
or do you, with Pete Rose, we have to say, or do you mean consecutive bets placed on baseball games?
No, that was an interesting mix of gambling and baseball.
Of all the people,
guess,
yeah. Of all the great performers to choose,
example.
You know?
Yeah.
Let me ask for your reflection on what I think a lot of people refer to as an example derived from the classics. Let's Make a Deal and Monty Hall. On the show Let's Make a Deal, there are three doors, 1, 2, and 3, right? And,
that's right.
And behind one, you know, there's a Ford Pinto. And behind another door, there's a plate of Hamburger Helper. And behind the third door, there's a lion that's getting ready to eat you. Now, how do you figure those odds?
Okay, so yes. Mathematicians do study this one. And yeah. There was an interesting twist to this Monty Hall one that really throws people. And the twist was this. The contestant, first of all, chooses one of the three doors and says, I'll choose door one. But Monty doesn't open the door. Monty says, opens another door to show you that there's nothing behind it, the Hamburger Helper, if you like, or whatever it is that you don't want. And then, and here's the twist, he says, would you like to stick with your original choice or do you want to switch? And the puzzle is, do your odds change by switching? And the answer, counterintuitive though it is that you double your chance of winning if you switch doors. You actually double the chance of winning from one-third to two-thirds. This is another instance where evolution makes us think about probabilities in the wrong way.
So there would have been more winners over the years if people had changed that second choice?
If the people that stuck changed, then twice as many of them would have won as didn't win.
Oh, my
gosh.
Twice
as many of them. It's a very interesting puzzle. I wrote about this once in an English national newspaper, The Guardian, mm-hmm. and my mailbox was absolutely overflowing with people who said, I had no idea what I was talking about, but believe me, the math is solid. You double the chance of winning if you switch.
You know, Keith, if this had been wider known, there would have been a lot more Ford Pintos on the road.
Yeah, and it was very well designed. This is why people who design these games really can, if they're trying to do it for a profit, really can make a lot of money, because it's very easy to seduce us, no matter how smart we are, it's very easy to seduce us with things about probability, because we tend to get them wrong.
Keith Devlin is our math guy, but during the week he's executive director of the Center for the Study of Language and Information at Stanford University. Keith, thanks very much.
Okay, my pleasure, Scott.